Welcome, everyone, to our study for April 15th, 2023. It is currently 15:02 Eastern Daylight Time, and I'm Ward Green. I didn't say my name correctly. Ward Green. I don't know if I can say my name. It's actually not an easy name to say. Ward Green. How do you say it quickly is the problem. So we have a study today. I'm very... Excited, I guess, is the word, but on a deeper level by what I learned today when I studied the chapter in Genesis that we're going to be studying, I finally resolved the problem of why the numbers of the souls who were the children of Jacob did not always appear to be adding up to the numbers that were given in the Bible. And I used a Septuagint, and that's how I was able to sort that out. But when you understand, actually both numbers, both sets of numbers, resolve, I mean, the Masoretic text version of it is not too far it's not much different, but it's not too far wrong either, as far as what... there was one problem, or was there? Was that a problem? No, I don't think there's a problem with either version, actually. I think the totals still add up in both versions, but because we have two different versions now, there's my air conditioning. Because we have two different versions, it's going to work... It's much more convincing that we have it correct now because we've got two versions of it. And they both add up. I think that's what happened. But when you're adding up, the problem is when you add up these souls or persons who came into Egypt with Jacob, you have to exclude Jacob himself. And you also have to exclude his son Joseph, who was already in Egypt. And you have to exclude Joseph's two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, and you also, so that's four that you have to exclude, but you also have to exclude any of the sons of Manasseh and Ephraim that are included in the list too. And that resolves all the problems when you do that. Now, and you have to note that the wives are not part of the tally. They're just not counted in the tally as far as the numbers went. And I think It's just for the purpose of keeping things doable, because it's hard to remember. Double the number of names is just, it's just twice as complicated. So Senusret the second, and perhaps the wives were also very humble, and like we see today, the women are a large army doing the work of preaching the good news. And yet they're very humble, and they hardly get mentioned on many occasions as far as... And they're not in prominent positions in the congregation, but they're doing the bulk of the work. So today's study in the Wild Road article, Little Children, is a very powerful one, too. Very powerful. It's one of the most important things that I stumbled upon and just happened to discover when I was doing my research, was that the Pharaoh Senusret II was involved in waterworks in Egypt, constructing a waterway. And part of that waterway is called the Bar Yosef, which means, in our language, Joseph's Canal. So why is it called Joseph's Canal? Well, there are some later commentators who say that there was a person who lived much later who was called Joseph, and it's named after him. But there are very good reasons to believe that that person, Joseph, is the Joseph of the Bible. So, I mean, the other people don't have as much credibility, or as much, the other people who argue differently are not considering the Bible as part of the discussion. and they don't have the same reputation as the Bible itself. So, and we have other story. We had the story related by Zechariah Sitchin too, that who said that Joseph was a builder of a canal or a waterway, and that was according to the folklore that was passed on in Egypt, you know, to which we now still have access. In these stories that have been surviving, that have lived all those years, and that to which I also referred, and which are talked about in the other articles, the earlier articles particularly, as well as possibly some of the later ones. But this article was from 2016, and there were articles back as far as 2009, I believe, that were talking about many other things, such as Senusrat III, who was a very important Egyptian ruler who did things with regard to his military conquests outside of Egypt. He conquered lands that were well outside, you know, in Asia Minor, or in just to the east, the northeast of Egypt, which is called Asia, but it's Asia Minor, is the technical term for it today. But he was a very great conqueror, Senusrat III. And he was the son of Senusrat II. Whereas normally, in Egypt, they don't name their sons after the fathers, they name them after the grandfathers. So this was an exception that also gives some more indication that perhaps these particular kings are not Egyptian. So let's read this paragraph, shall we? Senusrat II was involved in waterworks, and Bar Yosef, meaning Joseph's canal, in the Fayum oasis of Egypt. This fact alone suspiciously identifies him as Joseph. Senusrat III was said to be next to Osiris. The words "next to Osiris" in quotations. And this may identify him with Joseph's son Ephraim, as we have discussed at greater length in some earlier articles. It is highly significant that father and son among the royals of Egypt would take the same name, it being far more usual that grandfather and grandson should do so. Whatever his descent was, however, Senusrat III is the likely Egyptian identified by Manetho and Herodotus as Sesostris, as he is the great conqueror they describe. And Sesostris is just another form of the same name, Senusrat. It's just the exact same name, but translated into Greek from Egyptian. So Senusrat and Sesostris are the same name. But when Manetho and Herodotus wrote about this conqueror, who was an Egyptian, they called him Sesostris. That was his name. So that's today's study there. But the most important, perhaps, is the idea of Joseph's canal. When we read about Senusrat II, he was involved in the construction of these waterworks that included Joseph's canal. So the only thing we can take from that is that because he lived at the same time that Joseph did too, exactly the same time period in the genealogy, the dating of the chronology of the genealogy, we can only assume that either Joseph was working under him, or Joseph was in fact the same person as Senusrat II. That's the only logical or obvious conclusion to be drawn. There's nothing else to think of. And that's why it was so immensely exciting when I discovered that. But at the time, I was already excited by many discoveries at that time that I happened to be making, just that were occurring one after the other. So to say that this was more exciting than the others is hard to say, because it's difficult, because I know it was very exciting, but the problem with it is, even though it was perhaps more exciting than any other discovery, the fact that the Bar Yosef was being worked on by Senusrat II, it was it was difficult to find a way to share that in a believable way, or, you know, to, it was just, it was so, it's unbelievable, it's so incredible as a miracle to find evidence like that for the existence of Joseph in Egypt, when most people seem to believe that the only evidence for Joseph is in the Bible. It's just so mind-boggling, and it's so frightening to think that, it's such a big responsibility, it's frightening to think that we have this responsibility to share something that is historically immense and staggeringly important, you know, for the history of mankind. And it's not even part of the Bible, but it's completely affirming of the Bible. It's completely in agreement with the scriptures that we call God's Word, the Bible. As is also the chronology of the genealogy, it's also in harmony with the Bible. And that's why all of the genealogy, as well as this information that's part of it, is so weighty. You know, we can't obtain chronology. The point is, if I didn't believe that there was chronology that could be obtained from places outside of Scripture, right, from the heavens, from the study of the heavenly bodies, which Genesis 1 and 14 mentions that we were supposed to use the signs in the heavens to help us to determine the times and seasons. If we weren't able to look outside the Bible and obtain the chronology that way, we wouldn't discover these other very important things, such as to do with the Fayum Oasis in Egypt and Joseph's Canal. So, today's study in Genesis. But first of all, did I write down a scripture in Proverbs? Did I find one yet? I thought I might have, but maybe I didn't. Maybe I did. Let's see. I think that was it. Perhaps, was it? Or did I read that already? I don't think I prepared this today, but I see. Yes, I wrote it down. That's right. Yeah, I don't think I prepared it today, but I did write it down yesterday. This is Proverbs 12 and 8. Proverbs 12 and 8. For his mouth of discretion, a man will be praised, but one who is twisted at heart will come to be for contempt. I just realized I've got way too much. It's not supposed to be so warm, but it was, I mean, I was comfortable all morning, but it's just getting warmer and warmer here. And the air conditioner it's turned on, but there are sun emissions in the sun's rays that can warm up a house that come through the walls, you know, that are the microwaves. And that's why we get so warm, even when the temperature is set the same in the house. The thermostat's set the very same. But in the summer, we get heated up just like in a microwave oven. We get the microwaves from the sun. Makes a big difference to the temperature. So I feel better now. I think I'm cooler. But 12 and 8, for his mouth of discretion, a man will be praised. But one who is twisted at heart will come to be for contempt. Sounds important, doesn't it? It does. Excuse me. Have I got water? I don't have any water nearby. My throat is tickly or dry. If I have to go and get some water, I will, but I don't think I need to right now. For his mouth of discretion a man will be praised, but one who is twisted at heart will come to be for contempt. So let's look at the other versions of it. A man will be praised in proportion to his good judgment. Byington, that is. But a dizzy-headed man will come into contempt. A dizzy-headed man. Different from twisted at heart, isn't it? Sounds like. He is of a perverse heart, shall be despised. King James Version. A man shall be commended according to his wisdom. King James Version, for his mouth of discretion. A man will be praised. I like the discretion idea. The study Bible, the discretion of his mouth. Because we have this discretion idea implies not just wisdom, but it implies knowing when to say nothing. It implies a lot of things about a person's use of wisdom, not just the wisdom itself. Although wisdom is the use of knowledge. I mean, it's got to do with discretion as well. Wisdom includes more than just knowledge. It's how to apply the knowledge about which wisdom is also concerned, not just the knowledge itself. We might say that anyway. That's something that it seems to be true, that wisdom has to do with more than just knowledge. And there are many other scriptures nearby here that are wonderful to read. Better is the one lightly esteemed but having a servant than the one glorifying himself but in want of bread. Excellent advice there about not worrying about what other people think. Or about not seeking glory for ourselves. When we don't even have the basics or the essentials of life. Well, we could read Proverbs all day long and I would enjoy it, but I'd love to do that sometime. Maybe we will do it sometime soon, but let's go back to Genesis, our chapter, our study. Our chapter is what? 4:6 for today. Yesterday we had 4:5 when Joseph finally revealed himself to his brothers and convinced his brothers who he was. And then his brothers went back to Canaan and convinced Israel, their father, also known as Jacob, that Joseph was still alive. And Israel said, "Let me go and see him before I die." Accordingly, Israel, chapter 46, and all who were his pulled out and came to Beersheba, and he proceeded to sacrifice sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God talked to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob," to which he said, "Here I am." And he went on to say, "I am the true God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I shall constitute you there into a great nation. I myself shall go down with you to Egypt, and I myself shall surely bring you up also, and Joseph will lay his hand upon your eyes." After that, Jacob got up out of Beersheba, and the sons of Israel continued transporting Jacob, their father, and their little ones and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to transport him. Further, they took along their herds and their goods, which they had accumulated in the land of Canaan. Wow, imagine all the herds and the goods, all the goods, all the herds, everything they took with them. What a big procession that must have been. Eventually, they came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him. He brought his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, even all his offspring with him into Egypt. It's unbelievable to imagine it. Now, these are the names of Israel's sons who came into Egypt. Jacob and his sons. Jacob's firstborn was Reuben. And the sons of Reuben were Hanok and Palu and Hezron and Carmi. And the sons of Simeon were Jemuel. And Jamin and Ohad and Jachin and Zohar and Sheul, the son of a Canaanite woman. And the sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. And the sons of Judah were Er and Onan and Shelah and Perez and Zerah. However, Er and Onan died in the land of Canaan, as we know. And the sons of Perez came to be Hezron and Hamul. And the sons of Issachar were Tola and Puva and Yob and Shimron. And the sons of Zebulun were Sered and Elon and Jaliel. These are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Padan Aram, together with his daughter Dinah. All the souls of his sons and of his daughters were 33. And the sons of Gad were Ziphion, and Haggai, Shunai, and Ezbon, Eri, and Arodi, and Areli. And the sons of Asher were Imnah, and Ishva, and Ishvi, and Beriah. And there was Sarah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah were Heber and Malkiel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to his daughter Leah. In time she bore these to Jacob, 16 souls. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, were Joseph and Benjamin. And there came to be born to Joseph in the land of Egypt Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On, bore to him. Potipharah is what I was saying that before as, but it's Potipharah, apparently, in that particular accent. And the sons of Benjamin were Bela and Beker and Ashbel, Gera and Naaman, Ehi and Rosh, Mappim and Huppim and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob. All the souls were 14. And the sons of Dan were Hushim. And the sons of Naphtali were Jaziel and Guni, and Jezer and Shillem. And Naphtali it could be too, not Naphtali necessarily. Naphtali and Jaziel and Guni and Jezer and Shillem. These are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to his daughter Rachel. In time she bore these to Jacob. All the souls were 7. All the souls, let's summarize now, who came to Jacob into Egypt were those who issued out of his upper thigh, aside from the wives of Jacob's sons. All the souls were 66. And Joseph's sons who were born to him in Egypt were 2 souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. So the difference between 66 and 70 is Jacob and Joseph and Joseph's 2 sons. And he sent Judah in advance of him to Joseph to impart information ahead of him to Goshen. This is Jacob sending Judah in advance of him, Jacob, to Joseph to impart information ahead of Jacob to Goshen. After that, they came into the land of Goshen. Then Joseph had his chariot made ready and went up to meet Israel, his father, also known as Jacob, at Goshen. When he appeared to him, he at once fell upon his neck and gave way to tears upon his neck again and again. Finally, Israel said to Joseph, "This time I am willing to die, now that I've seen your face, since you are still alive." Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "Let me go up and report to Pharaoh and say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who are in the land of Canaan have come here to me. And the men are shepherds because they became stock raisers and their flocks and their herds, and all they have brought here. And what must occur is that when Pharaoh will call you and actually say, "What is your occupation?" you must say, "Your servants have continued to be stock raisers from our youth until now, both we and our forefathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, because every herder of sheep is a detestable thing to Egypt." And that's the end of Genesis 46. I almost said Exodus. It was Genesis 46 that we just read, little children. So that was, wasn't that emotionally, it was almost as emotional as the previous chapter, which was very emotional because of Joseph having revealed himself to his brothers as the ruler of Egypt. But this perhaps is equally as emotional. It didn't affect me quite as strongly, but it's certainly very emotional when Jacob at last sees his long-lost son Joseph still alive in Egypt, and not only that, but ruling Egypt. That is very emotional when I think of it that way. So it's hard to contain the emotions. That's the thing. And we can imagine how important Joseph was in Egypt. He easily could have been, well, he was on the same level as the Pharaoh. He easily could have been one of the Pharaohs, although we don't have the mention of that particular thing in the Bible. He certainly had all the authority of the Pharaoh at the time about which we're reading now in the Bible. It's an unbelievable story, and yet we have very big reasons, very great reasons to believe it's true. Now, when we consider the numbers, it's rather complicated. You have to add up all the sons, and I did that. The only number that keeps coming up differently is the 33. When I add up Israel's sons who were born to Leah, I get 32, not 33. So I have to wonder, why is that? And then when we add up these numbers, of course, I think it's because possibly included in the 33 could be Jacob himself. But when I add them up, I get 70 instead of 66. So if Jacob is included in the first group of sons who are mentioned there as 33 and 46 and 15, 33, the sons of his sons and his daughters. And the daughters are, Dinah's included in that number of 33, except I only get 32, including Dinah. So there's one missing. Now, it could have been that there was another daughter that wasn't known. Her name wasn't known, or it could have been something that perhaps one of the sons wasn't, the name wasn't known. We don't know what happened or why why it doesn't add up to 33. I don't know. I mean, I added it up many, many times. I've added it up many times. We can do it right now if we want, but I mean, Dinah is one, right? And then Jahleel, two, three, four, five, including Zebulun, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, including Issachar, 11, 12, 13, including Perez, 14, we have to exclude Perez now, 14, 15, and then that's 15, and then exclude Aaron Onan, 16, Judah, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, including Simeon, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, including Reuben. I get 32 every time I do it. I've done it many times. But if we included Jacob within all of those, then we'd have 33. And then the other numbers seem to add up correctly. And there's a difference in the sons of Joseph between the Septuagint and this particular version from the Masoretic text, I believe, is why. It's from the different Hebrew text in the Masoretic copy instead of the Septuagint. But if we look at 70 here, there's, in the Masoretic we see 70, but we also see in the Septuagint 75. Can you see that? There's 70 Masoretic, right. So let me do this. Maybe I could see this. The Septuagint. It's being blocked out. Can I do it? I can't. I'd have to move my picture. Oh, I know. I can scroll it down. There we go. Let's do it this way. Yeah, this should work, I think. There it is. The Septuagint version. It says 75. See that on the lower right there? 75 for the Septuagint. So, we can go and look at the Septuagint. I've done that. And it's because the sons of Joseph in the Septuagint version are more than two. And it says nine, in fact, in the Septuagint. This is the Septuagint. Nine persons, it says in the Septuagint. However, I believe the nine is not, that the nine might be perfectly correct, but if you add them up, if you look at them in the Septuagint here, you see The sons of Joseph mentioned in Egypt are Manasseh. Right. His sons are Machir and Galad. So that's Manasseh, Machir, and Galad. That's three. And then Ephraim. Ephraim has three more. Well, more than three more, because one of his sons, he has, well, Ephraim has three more, that's right, isn't it? But including Ephraim, it's four. Because Ephraim has South Elam and Team, and South Elam has Edom. So Ephraim, South Elam, Team, and Edom is four. And Manasseh had Machir and Galad, so that's seven, including Manasseh. So we have seven sons of Joseph. So then if we add Joseph and Jacob onto those two, we get... But that's not right, is it? Because we didn't get 33 correct. So, yeah, it's all right, though. It works out perfectly. It's fine. It's just... I don't think the... If we're adding back... No, it's correct. It's right. We got 70, including... Yeah, it's perfectly fine. I think that this is the way I understand it now. It's very complex to understand it, I find, but I keep struggling with it. But I think I have one understanding that makes sense, which is that the 66 that are given here for the one... you notice it says they came to Jacob, so it doesn't include Jacob, the 66. And therefore, it excludes Joseph and his two sons that were mentioned here. It didn't mention the other sons of Joseph here in verse... in verse 20. It only mentions Manasseh and Ephraim. They're the only sons of Joseph. So they're the ones mentioned in this Masoretic version. So we have Joseph, his two sons, and Jacob are four. Even though we added up to 70, including Jacob, we get back to 66 perfectly when we exclude the four, which are Jacob and Joseph and his two sons. So 66 is correct, right? Then we get 70 when we include them back in. Again, so the total of 70 includes Jacob, and they're all the souls of the house of Jacob, who must have included Jacob himself, or Israel, as he was also called. So that 70 adds up perfectly in this text, the New World Translation, and based on the Masoretic. But we also look at the footnote. Why can't I click on that? Oh, I did already. Here it is. Yeah, so we have the 70, or 75 in the Septuagint, and the difference in the Septuagint is that the total in the Septuagint is actually 74, or it's 32, plus we have more sons of Joseph. So instead of 70, he had two sons, five sons. It's interesting. I've done it. But I've done it today. It's just, it's complex. I got 74 at one point, and that would be excluding Jacob. But I definitely got 75 as well as the grand total. But nine persons, it says. But we don't see the nine sons mentioned of Joseph in this text of the Septuagint. This is the Oxford Nets version of the Septuagint. But let's look at it again for a second here. It gives the total. Oh, I know what the reason is. It gives 18 persons. There it is. 18 persons for the sons of Rachel instead of 14. That's verse 22. That was the difference. Okay. 18, verse 22, 14 for Rachel. So there's a difference of four in the two versions, and that's how I get 74 when I add them up, right? 74 in the Septuagint, that's perfectly fine. And then when we had Joseph's sons, 74 minus 66 is 8, there's a difference of 8. And Joseph had how many sons. I know it added up. I'm quite sure it added up. I was confident, but it's very misleading when you go to try to explain it to somebody else. You can get very confused because the people to whom you're explaining it don't have the knowledge don't have identical knowledge. Their knowledge is not the same. So these are the sons of Rachel, 18 persons. Right? Okay, so look at Manasseh was born Machir and Galaad. Right? So that's three, Manasseh, Machir, Galaad, Ephraim, four, Zephon, five, Tam, six, Edom, seven. But Joseph is eight. Right? So we had to exclude Joseph as well. That's right. So we exclude Joseph and that's perfect then. We exclude the eight because they were already in Egypt. So the ones who came to Jacob into Egypt were 74 minus eight, which is 66. Even in the Septuagint, it's still 66. And when we look at the Septuagint again, it also says in verse, it says exactly the same number 66. In verse 26 it says all persons were 66. They came with Jacob into Egypt. And they don't include Joseph and his sons, therefore. So 74 minus 8 is 66. It's perfect. How do we get 74? Well, we added up. I can just give you an example. Seven here. Seven persons. Right? They were the sons of Bilhah or Bala, the maidservant of Rachel. Seven. Then we add 18 for Rachel. It's 25. And then we have, we're going to add the sons of, that was 18 for Rachel, right? We've got to find the next previous. 16 for Leah. 16. So we had 25 and 16 is 41. And 41, we go back to the previous page, we have 33 more. 41 and 33 is 74. So it adds up. The only problem is, once again, we're finding that this 33 looks like it includes Jacob himself because we can't get 33. We only get 32 when we add them up in the Septuagint as well. But that's perfect. It's so perfect that it does add up, which is quite remarkable. Seeing how old this book is, the Bible is... We know this is called the Law of Moses. It's at least as old as Moses, who was living... He was 80 years old, approximately, at the time of the Exodus in 1493 BCE. That's how old this book is. But he wrote his law sometime during the Exodus journey. During the time in the wilderness, he may have written this. So this may have been written a couple of years after 1493, perhaps. A few years or some years after, but... The original version of it, of course, could be much older in terms of when Joseph wrote this information or whoever wrote this at the time. If it wasn't passed down merely by word of mouth, then it may have been written long before Moses, right back to the time of Joseph in 1914 when Jacob came into Egypt. This could have been written in 1914 BCE. But the numbers tally so well. Like, it's remarkable. So we do have a perfect tally there, I'm excited to say. I'm pleased. And it's for the first time I believe these numbers must be very accurate, you know, considered very... I mean, I'm more convinced having seen the Septuagint version of it. It's so consistent, and that therefore we have a confirmation that's independent, almost independent. It's not really independent because it's still the Bible, but it's a different manuscript. It has different names for Joseph's son. It has more sons of Joseph, but yet the numbers tally. And that's where the number 75 comes from, which some manuscripts give here is from the Septuagint, including Jacob. It's 75 people. And they're not all men, actually, because we saw that Dinah was included, and Sarah was included. There's another daughter included here. The wives are not included, but the children are included. the female children, that's right, so they're included. If we included the wives, it would be a number higher than that, but it certainly might be double or more. But still, 70, who came into Egypt, we would say 75, including the son of Jacob, who was already in Egypt, and his sons, who had been born in Egypt. That makes 75. And it's including Jacob himself, all of these ones who came into Egypt. That's today's study. It's April 15th, 2023, 1542 hours, Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. Maybe I can learn to say my name better, even. And, for Ward Green, for me, myself, it's Hammy the Crow. And, Cammy, this is my new watch. But you know what? I'm going to say bye for now, but I want to say that this new watch is exactly, it's keeping perfect time. It's kept within exactly 1 second. It's on the second exactly for more than a day now. I believe it's more than a day, isn't it? Definitely more than a day, and it's kept perfect time. I've never seen a watch do that before, I don't think, with a mechanical watch. This watch is my best watch. And that means I won't be able to be buying any more watches. Because how can you do better than a perfect watch, than a watch that keeps perfect time? How can you do better than perfect? I don't think I can buy any more watches. I'm so impressed with this. It's Cami. It's a Kamatsu made by Orient. And it's regulated right now to perfection on my wrist. It's an automatic watch with an F6922 movement made by Orient. One of the best economy watches. It's not an expensive movement either. I mean, or it's not an expensive watch compared to the Swiss watches. Far less money. But, of course, because of its price, it won't be economical to have it serviced by a professional and pay hundreds of dollars to service it because it only costs a few hundred. So it's not going to be worth servicing unless you do the service yourself. So I might have to learn how to service my own watches. But for Ward Green, it's Hammy the Crow and Cammy saying bye for now.